Hello and welcome back to another English episode of Parlando, your podcast for insights of the opera world. Today I have the big honor to meet once more one of my idols who recently got a stage colleague and awesome friend of mine. If you have seen live operas in the past 20 years, there is no way you are not familiar with his name. Starting his career with mostly Mozart and Baroque repertoire, he established himself soon as one of the most exciting and brilliant bass baritone singers of the world, extending his repertoire also to bel canto and the German lead. Many audio and video recordings testify the quality of his singing and phenomenal stage presence. Besides that, he is a wonderful and humble person, and I can tell you firsthand, everything is so much more fun with him in the team. I am happy he is spending some time with us today to speak about his exciting career. The wonderful Italian bass baritone Luca Pisaroni.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Benvenuto, Luca. Grazie. I'm so happy you are here.
Thanks.
It's quite difficult to give you a label. I mean, you're singing both the classical baritone as well as the bass baritone repertoire. How would you yourself describe your voice and your Fach?
That's a very good question, and I don't have an answer. I am very grateful to José Van Damme. The great José Van Damme I work with in Zurich sometime, and he told me he had the same issue in his career, everybody trying to label him. And he said to me, forget about defining your instrument, try to sing well what you're singing.
Whatever it
and
is,
I thought that's a very good, you know, philosophy for your career. And I think of myself as a pure bass baritone. I'm not a baritone because the tessitura on the high register for a prolonged period of time, for me it's a problem. And I'm not a bass because I don't have this, you know, deep
this arrastro
kind of voice. So I'm right in between, and I decided that I will try to sing with my own voice. And sometimes, you know, I push myself in terms of dramatic on the height and sometimes on the low, and I try to do a good job. And fun enough, I think this classification is something that is an obsession of the last 10-15 years. Because 50 years ago everybody sang everything.
You're right.
You know, everybody, I mean, Fischer Disco sang everything. Walter Berry sang Herman Pry. Yeah. And it was always some repertoire that was a little bit on the edge, but nobody cared. And now it seems like, oh, it's a Verdi baritone, it's a bel canto bass. It's just something that I don't look at. And every time I look at a piece of music, I think, is it good for my voice? And can I say something special? That's it.
I also think we are limiting ourselves with those stupid labels, and also the opera directors, because as you said, you are the Verdi baritone, you are the Mozart baritone, but then you are stuck in this direction, aren't you?
I totally agree with you. And especially I find that it is the opposite of what being a singer and an artist is, which is exploring. You know, not everything is supposed to be a success, but at least I think we have the duty to try. Because a lot of time I heard singer that I thought, that role maybe doesn't, and then all of a sudden I saw the performance and I went, absolutely spectacular. And so I think it's really sad that we have such a rigid frame. Well, actually everybody should push ourselves, because if you look at the repertoire and you think of the role of Traviata was sang by everybody. And I'm talking about leggero sopranos to dramatic soprano and everything in between. And everybody has something to add to it. So why to limit ourselves like this?
I love that idea. Luca, you grew up in Italy, but actually you were born in Venezuela.
Correct.
Tell us something about that interesting background.
I was born in Venezuela by mistake. My parents are from Busseto, Giuseppe Verdi's hometown.
Of course.
And my father moved to Venezuela for 10 years. He worked there. And I just happened to be born in Ciudad Bolívar, and I have some memories, I had to be honest, of the apartment, of the Orinoco, and the great thing that happened to me is that I was speaking Spanish when I was 3-4 years old.
Wow.
And then I never spoke another word of Spanish until I went back to Argentina in 2000, and then in 10 days it just all came back, and everybody was astonished that I could speak Spanish. It's very interesting how your brain retains so much information when you're a child.
Yeah, right.
And then all of a sudden it's all there, even if you didn't think about it. So I always say to people with kids, teach them as many languages, because even if you think that at the moment they don't remember, there is going to be a moment around 15, 20 that they I remember that, and that's invaluable.
Yeah, awesome. Do you still have some attractions to Venezuela, even family? Or?
No, I have. I don't have. I've never been back, curiously enough. You know, the political situation is not fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I never went back. My dream it would be to do something with Gustavo Dudamel and his Sistema, simply because I was born there, you know.
So back in Italy, you grew up, you said it already, in Busseto, the town of Giuseppe Verdi in the beautiful region of Emilia-Romagna. So I can imagine inspiration everywhere around the corner, right?
You know, it is so interesting to me to talk about this time, because, you know, when I meet colleagues from America or France or Spain, they all talk about arriving to opera at a certain age, and I only knew opera, you know, from the age of 6 in that area.
Yeah.
Everybody listens to opera. I would walk into town and, you know, there were like shops playing Verdi music, playing, you know, Puccini. And for me, it is like a second nature. I never had to think about it. It is amazing how the environment you grew up in shapes you, right?
So
everybody, you know, was listening to at the time, what was the Doors, the whatever group, and I was listening to Franco Corelli, Luciano Pavarotti, Carlo Bergonzi. It's amazing. And it was amazing also because Carlo Bergonzi had Academia in Busseto, and he would do 6 or 7 weeks of teaching twice a year. And I remember going to school, eating as fast as I could, and then going there and just spending 4 hours listening to him teaching.
Awesome.
I always knew I wanted to be an opera singer. There was something about the music that just spoke to me, and that's why.
Already in that age you discovered
decided, I tell you, it's actually kind of pathetic, and it tells you what an opera nerd I am. I decided at 11 that I wanted to become an opera singer.
Amazing. But because you discovered that there is a voice, or just because you want to be part of that opera world?
No, because I saw a commercial on TV with Pavarotti singing, and there was something about producing that kind of sound with your own body that just fascinated me.
Yeah.
So I looked, I remember watching it, and I thought, oh, that's it. That's what I wanted to do in my life. And I got lucky that I actually got a voice because, you know, not everybody wants to become an opera singer, gets to be an opera singer, right?
Yeah.
And I was a tenor when I was 11, 12.
Really?
I never had a voce bianca, never. I was singing Tosca, I was singing, you know, I would put a cassette of Pavarotti, and then on top I would go, no, no, abato, mai tanto la vida. And then eventually, you know, as a boy, you change your voice, and I could see that I could not reach it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the realization that I would not become a tenor was my biggest disappointment.
Until I hope then. Not till today.
No, it's funny enough. I always say I am a tenor trapped in a bass baritone body, because it's true. I always look at the tenor voice with such an incredible love and admiration.
Yeah. So it was also around that age when you took your first voice lessons?
No, at the time. I decided to go and sing in the choir of the church, mm-hmm. which I think was one of the best decisions I've ever made, because it teaches you to listen, to sing with other people. It teaches you to learn music. It teaches you
socializing.
That's the thing, yeah. And it seems stupid to be singing, you know, the Regina Celi from Cavalleria Rusticana for Easter, right? But I really learned so much, and the phrasing, and you know, trying to make music. It was really an incredible experience. And then I remember I did an audition with Bergonzi, and Bergonzi told me you need to wait until you're 18. Because the voice is not formed yet. Mm. And then at 18 I started, and the funny thing, if I can say this, the funny thing is that the first time I had a lesson, this teacher in Milano told me, how come you have this sense of phrasing? So, and I said, and I always thought about the teaching, you know, of Bergonzi, because just listening to his masterclasses and the fact that for him, you know, words are important and the phrase and the line, I realized I learned something without ever having to study it. So I was really lucky. Yeah. I was really, really
lucky. I can
imagine.
And what did your parents say to this choose of profession? Did they like that?
Look, I never had rebellious years when I was an adolescent, because all my friends were hanging out among themselves, when I hanged out with people that were at least 30 to 40 years older than me, because there was an association in Busseto called Amici di Verdi, mm-hmm. and there is still there, and they used to go to concert and opera all throughout North Italy. So instead of going to see football or go to the disco, I would, you know, go to bed very early on Saturday, because normally on Sunday, which was the day off, I would take a train with them, go to, let's say, Genova, seeing Turandot, and coming back in the evening. And so my parents, I think they were relieved that I was having such old friends
taking care of you,
because they would take care of me. And they saw that it was a passion from very early on. So it's, you know, I always say, when you have such a passion, you cannot stop it.
Yeah, right.
You just can, you know, you just can nurture it, but you can't stop it.
There's a one-way ticket, right?
Yeah, it's once, I think, once you are, you know, you get bit by this love for opera, it's impossible to just let it go.
Yeah. Do you remember your first visit to an opera theater? What was it? Who was singing?
Oh, I remember it. I remember it was 1986. I was 11 years old, and it was Aida, the Reina di Verona. My father took me, and I remember Celeste, Aida. I don't remember the singer, but I do remember the evening and this feeling of seeing people being able to express their feeling through the voice, which is for me is the why I do this.
Starting with Arena di Verona, I mean, wow, that's a first impression.
Right,
huh?
Right. And then after that, this was in the summer, after that, my second experience was Pavarotti in Parma, mm-hmm. sang a concert at the Palazzo dello Sport.
You've heard him.
And I heard him and I fainted because a reason why I'm an opera singer is because of Luciano.
Yeah.
And there was something about that voice that it's impossible to express.
Yeah.
And I really feel sorry for the younger generation that they never got a chance to hear him singing, because it was mind-blowing. And I was lucky enough to be present when he recorded a CD in Milano at the at the Oratorio Giuseppe Verdi in the conservatorium, and it was just mind blowing. The voice. It was a session at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it sounded like $1 million. I mean, it just as a singer, you just yeah. I remember sitting there, and I mean, I couldn't breathe because yeah. the beauty of the sound.
It's a miracle. Eh?
The size of the voice. Just. I'm sorry for you.
Lucky you.
Never yeah. got to listen to this incredible instrument.
Ah, you're so right. Did you listen to recordings back then?
Yes. Yeah. I always do.
And still. I always do.
And I always tell to the young generation, listen, because it informs your taste. It teaches you which tool you need to tell what you want to say.
Right.
And the point is very important for me. It's not about copying.
No.
It's not about copying. It's knowing, there are those possibilities.
Yeah.
Which one I can get close to you, to it, and what can I give of personal so that people can see that it's, you know, there is me into this.
Yeah.
And so when people say, oh, I don't go, I always like, scream like an old guy. But because it's very important, I think, that people need to know. And for example, for me, it was incredibly important, like, for example, in the recitativi, when I do Mozart,
mm-hmm.
and when I sing a Schubert lead, because it's not about copying what Thomas Kvasthoff did. It's about saying, oh, look at the tempo. I like this tempo. Maybe I can do, you know, this
mm-hmm.
for me. And it's the language, you know, the atmosphere. It's incredibly important
yeah.
for me.
I always do it. Yeah.
And I always do it. And every time I do a role or a new role, I have like, you know, for example, I'm going to do Anna Bolena, and I took, you know, this singer and that singer and that singer because of the tempi, because, oh, look, he didn't take a breath here.
Mm-hmm.
So that is this phrase.
So much.
It
yeah.
is really
yeah.
helpful.
Yeah.
And I think it, you know, it also makes you very reactive when a conductor asks you something, because you know the possibilities.
Right.
And you are not like, oh, okay, you want it slower? I don't know what to do. Instead, you know that the tempi can go from really fast
yeah.
to slower, so you can adapt.
And also learned the traditions.
I agree.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree.
It's so interesting to see how people sung 50 years ago, how people sung 80 years ago. What changed? Did it change in a good way, in a bad way? What can you adapt from them?
I hear you, and it's funny enough because when I did my first Gounod Faust, I went to Van Damme, and I remember I went and amoi Satan amoi, and I went tried to make the biggest sound, and he stopped me immediately, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "You know, Jose, it's the first thing that people hear my voice." And he said, "What is in the orchestra? Is 2P." And it's written, me voici. He said, and trust me, my friend, he said to me, I remember, you know, you have 2.5 hours to show that you have voice. You know, you have to know the tradition to say, you know, a lot of time, you know, some roles have such, you know, layer and layer of people doing things that are not written, and you need to say is really what the composer wanted, and look at it, and I try to do that, I have to be honest.
Yeah, I love that. Who are the singers which inspire you the most? I mean, you mentioned already José Van Damme, but who are your CD or recording heroes?
Yeah, but I mean, there are too many because I think I love the variety of interpretation that are out there, and I think you know, the great singers always had something very unique and personal. And I am so against this thing that when people say there is one way to do something, and I completely, totally disagree. Mm. There are so many ways, because there are people that arrive to your heart by the beauty, people that arrive to your heart because the voice is big. But for me, the most amazing thing is to seduce the audience and to bring the audience into my world. And this is, to be honest with you, and I'm totally, totally honest here. The best compliment when people tell me, you moved me, I cried, I laughed. You know, the beauty of the voice is what it is. There's not much you can do it. It, you know, it is a gift, you have it, you should be able to sing in tune, you know, hit all the notes. But I think the most amazing thing is when somebody says, oh, I never thought about this character in that way, and it moved me, because that is my job. I find, and that's my belief, that the voice is not the end, is the tool, is the meaning, is the tool for me to express something.
Yeah.
You know, beauty for the sake of beauty, for me, it's boring.
All right. Yeah, it's not about the perfection of singing. Yeah, it's in between the lines.
Yes, right? And this for me was Arnon Kur. When I was very young, he said to me, I look for the truth.
Yeah.
And the truth sometimes comes through ugliness. So I don't want you, and I, for me, is Italian, that we are obsessed with beauty. You know, it's always like, oh, it's always.
Bel canto,
always. We are so obsessed with it. And I remember when I did Mazzetto with him, which, you know, when people say, oh, Mazzetto, I, at the time when I did it, I always thought it was one of the most amazing roles I've ever done.
For me too, I loved it.
Because even if it's small, you can make an impression and do something.
Of course.
And I don't believe in this when people are always, I hear easy role. I never in my 20 year of career ever approached a role and went, ah, that's a walk in the park.
Bravo.
Every role for me had challenges, and I had to focus. And Mazzetto.
Aria, I mean, it's not easy.
No, but for the aria, the recitative, especially with Don Giovanni, with her. And I remember after Don Giovanni beats you, and he was, hi, la testa mia, you know, and I went to the music rehearsal, and my first intention and my first instinct was to go, hi, la testa, you know, to sing beautiful. And Arnon Kur said to me, no, Luca, he just beat the crap out of you.
Yeah, already died.
He said, I need to hear the pain. And it was amazing, because at the end he told me in pitch, but almost not in pitch. So we managed to do stuff like stay in pitch, and I thought it was amazing, because it's like being in a movie.
Yeah.
It gives you the possibility to express yourself so much.
In an honest way. Yeah. No, and I also think Mazzetto, I mean, as you mentioned, most of the people think, oh, stupid idiot. But it's so, I love this relationship, Mazzetto Zerlina, the most honest person in this whole
and
damn
also,
opera.
Also,
right?
Wait a second. Mazzetto stand up to Giovanni,
right?
Because he said, you know, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I swear to you, never in my life I looked a piece of paper and went, oh, this is a walk in the park.
Yeah.
Tell my wife, ask my wife. Every time I have to sing, I think it's the most difficult, and I focus my attention to it.
Yeah. You yourself are well represented on the CD and DVD market. I mean, what kind of feeling is it to visit a recording store and see, oh, there are at least three Figaros of mine, my Leporello, my Handel section. Isn't it overwhelming to think that you will be the inspiration for the future singers?
It's embarrassing. I have to tell you, it's embarrassing because it's embarrassing because it's, you know, as a performer, and you know this, listening to yourself is the most cruel thing that you can do, because every time I listen to something I've done, I say, I should have not done that. Oh, this I could have said. I know I could have sung better. You know, it is. We are so critical, but there are a couple of things that I've done throughout my career that I am proud, and I have to say I am most really proud of the Giovanni, the Figaro, because, you know, I put a lot of energy and effort in trying to come up with a very natural and fresh way to sing recitativi and to make it sound like they are not written, but they are created in the moment. Mm-hmm. And so when I hear sometimes and I see something, I go, okay, it is not good, but it's not bad either. So that's already an achievement. And I am, you know, incredibly proud that I got to do so many things with such amazing conductors and directors.
Yeah,
really. Because of one of the things that I miss about, you know, these times is the fact that sometimes the knowledge doesn't get transferred from one generation of singer to the next. And I tell you, because I got to sing with great singers who helped me solve issues, helped me think in a different way, and helped me find myself. And this can only happen when you are exposed to this kind of people, and you know, it's really a pity, because I think knowledge and experience are an incredible value, and lately has been like, it's actually a minus to have two, because people think that, like, for example, my Figaro, that I would go somewhere and do my Figaro. But this is cannot be further from the truth, because I have sang probably 15 different production and 150 performances, and never I went and said, you know, this is what I think about the guy, this is what I do. Every time I'm like, okay, I'm listening. What part of this character that I think I know, I've missed? And this makes my job so much more fun. Can you imagine to do 150 performances in same way? Oh, it's my idea of hell.
I cannot even imagine singing 150 performances one role. I mean, I'm really impressed by that.
Yeah.
And that's the way I can imagine that you keep it fresh, right? Because you stay open-minded and always have the ability.
And it's the discovery that keeps me going, because I always like to have a conversation with a conductor and a director, and they say, look, I feel this tempo. And I'm like, oh, I never done it. That's brilliant. Because I like to this search, you know, to search for the truth of what we are trying to do on stage. So I never would like to do the same thing twice in the same way, because I think it would be extremely boring.
Se volete nella mia scuola mi la capriola mi insegnerò. Se volete dire nella mia scuola la capriola mi insegnerò, sì, mi insegnerò, sì, mi insegnerò. Se vuol ballare, parlare, signor contino, il chitarrino ne suonerò. Sì, le suonerò.
So you then started singing in Milano, yes. Buenos Aires, yes. And finally also New York.
Correct.
How do you remember this time of your education?
It's very interesting when you are a young singer, because you think you graduate from the conservatorio and then you think that's it. Now I'm ready. And the truth is, the work begins.
Starts,
and it never ends. I didn't realize that, I didn't know, honestly, when I started, that it's a work in progress. And the funny thing is, I do not believe in a teacher that gives you everything. I believe in picking from different people,
yeah,
to become the best that you can become.
Right.
Because I never, you know, to me, having one teacher and trusting everything on one is a little bit like giving away the responsibility if you don't make it.
It's very dangerous.
For me, it's very.
I think so.
Yes.
Because I know many people who do it like that. And sometimes, if they're not clever enough, they follow every step of their teacher, even if it's not good.
Really?
And I'm listening and like, come on, you have to be aware of that. That's not how it works. But they are so stuck, and it's like a religion for them. Because,
yes,
no, he or she said, and I trust her or him. I'm like, Jesus Christ,
and
listen,
you know,
to yourself.
It was very interesting for me, because I realized very early. Also, I've always been very jealous of my instrument, because I really realized that, you know, there are two tiny vocal cords, and I think if you hurt them, most of the time it's over. Your career is over. So I always was very protective of my instrument. So I would go to teachers, especially new teacher, and like push like crazy to see if they would notice. And if they would not notice, I would go home to my wife and say, this is not for me.
Good.
I would do tricks to see, you know, to see, because I think it's very important as an artist that you have self-awareness. You need
the most important thing
to know, do I sound good? Can I do better? Is in tune? Is it the attacco, is it as pulito, or is like, you know? You really have to know, because just to say, oh, the teacher told me to do that, no, it's not, yeah, is not my way of doing. Maybe it works for other people, but yeah, I tell you what, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And so that period for me was interesting, because I took a lot of things and trying to create my own personality, and I really suggest everybody who studies to create, you know, to get the tools from the teachers to be able to do your things by yourself.
Right.
Because it's, at the end of the day, singing on the stage is your teacher. I'm telling you, because a lot of time I do coachings and I sing some notes in a certain way, and then I get on stage and I sing them completely different. And I tell you, because the size of the theater is bigger, because I feel dramatically I need to open up a sound that in the studio I actually covered, and I realized that on stage it doesn't work, and you just have to be aware of it and work on it. Yeah. And spoiler alert, the learning never ends.
Yeah.
You know, every night, every show, every rehearsal, it's like a singing lesson, because you get up, you warm up, and you think, I have no voice, and then you go and everything is easy. And sometimes you are in your dressing room and I think, I'm Boris Christoph, Cesare Siepe, Sam Raimi in Union Person, and I go out and I can't hear myself, and I think it's the worst. You know, so every is a very humbling profession. I tell you that.
After every sentence of yours, I want to say, agree. No, it's so important what you say. And I believe in that, what you say, because I also think your best teacher is the stage. I mean, when I remember the most things I've learned on stage, even in doing bullshit, I even learned from all the mistakes I did on stage. No one could teach me before. I had to make them on stage and to prepare myself for the next time. And I also think that the real work starts when you are entering the stage. Because yes, as you said, then you feel like, what's the difference between the rehearsal room to the stage?
No, and I tell you, it was amazing for me. 2003 in Salzburg, I was doing Publio with Arnon Kur. And, you know, another role that people think, oh, why would you sing it? I think it's an amazing role. And
me
I
too.
Amazing role. Amazing. The trio.
Even the aria is cute.
The character. Yeah. And I remember, you know, in the rehearsal room with him, I was with him. But then with the distance, I was always behind.
And Felsenreitschule, right.
And Arnon Kur, you know, and we did the trio where we were on three different levels. And Arnon Kur always looked at me and said, Luca, you're behind. And I was like, you know, and I was... Yeah. It's so interesting that you can only learn to anticipate some time when you do it.
Right.
There is no rehearsal in a Probebühne that helps you with that. You just have and when the conductor at the third time tells you you are late, you're like, I really
your
have to get
beat.
my together, because otherwise here is not going to be happy. So there you have it.
And apropos, because we said you studied in Milano, there's a fun fact. You made your La Scala debut in 2017.
Correct.
Singing Leporello, many years after starting your international career.
Yes.
Why so late?
That's a very good question. I never had an Italian career. It's incredible. In 20 years, I sang three times in Italy.
Isn't
which
it funny?
Which, because I said, and I can tell you what was it. It was Così fan tutte in Torino, Don Giovanni in Milano, and Fidelio in Milano. And that's it. I never sang it. I lied. And Le Siège de Courante, the Rossini Opera Festival. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But it's all non-Italian intendant that mm-hmm. invited me. Because for whatever reason, I was never invited. And I... Somehow I understand this because I am not an Italian singer, and I did not grow up musically in Italy. I really feel like I'm a Mitteleuropäisch singer.
So what do you mean if you say you're not a typical Italian singer? I mean in sound, in behavior, in
everything, in everything, because it's in sound. I think beauty for the sake of beauty is the most boring thing. Because of the fact that I think Liederabend are one of the most beautiful things to express yourself. I think singing in different languages is amazing. I doing modern piece is amazing. So it's an attitude that you as a German comes natural to you to sing in Italian, to sing Lieder, to do concert repertoire. You know, when you know, I'm probably one of the few Italian that thinks that Brahms Requiem is better than Verdi Requiem. You know, in terms of honestly, it's a great piece of music. But in terms of what moves me and how much more I think about death and life, Brahms Requiem for me, it's the apex of composition.
Yeah.
And so, I think that's one of the reasons why I always was attracted to Europe more than Italy. And also, I like to act. And old-fashioned production, where you just stand and sing, are not really for me. And so at the time, especially in the year 2000, Europe, Germany, Austria, France had so much more to offer. And so I always wanted to, you know, work with a director who would shape me and not to do, you know, an old-fashioned production. Because, you know, for me, acting is very important. And so I wanted to learn.
So you're not too unhappy that your Italian career isn't at the top?
No, it's a pity. I find it's a pity because I think the audience needs... I don't want to say an update, but...
But the variety.
A little bit more... something to be confronted with something that is more contemporary, because I am of the opinion that old-fashioned production and new production should be judged by not by the costume or how it looks, but is it intelligent or not?
Yeah.
Is the persona regie interesting or not?
Yeah.
Then if we put it, if we do Figaro, you know, in the 18th century, or if we do it in 2000, it's irrelevant as long as we do something with it that makes sense.
So for you, it works both ways?
Yes.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But for me, it's very important that I understand the concept, what he wants, what the director wants, where he wants to go, because obviously then I can go home and think what I can do with that character, with the role.
When we speak about Figaro,
yes,
your opera, your professional opera debut,
yes,
if I'm well informed, did happen in Klagenfurt,
correct,
Austria, in 2001, singing
Figaro.
So how do you remember that debut, that first night on stage singing that role?
I don't know. I have I remember that. I think I was totally irresponsible to make a debut with such a huge role. And I have phenomenal memories of that experience, because my count was Florian Busch. And I remember the director was Philipp Himmelmann and the conductor was Michael Güttler. And I remember that it was a very good production. I had the most amazing time, and because I couldn't believe that I was actually doing what I wanted to do, and they were
in quite young age.
Yes, and they were paying me to do that. So I thought that was heaven. If heaven exists, I think it's pretty much what I felt in that period. I still have a recording, a video recording of some scenes, and I really looked at it recently, and I remember putting my hands on my head and then going, oh my God, I had no idea what I was doing. But it's fun. I think it's fun because you can see really that being an artist and a performance is actually a journey.
Yeah.
And I would not be here to say what I have to say about Figaro had I not done that.
Yeah. So isn't it beautiful? And how did that happen? I mean, your debut in Austria, there was a casting, there was an agent who brought you there.
It was interesting because I sang, my only competition, which was in Romania in 1999, and as a prize for winning, one of the prizes, was to do the first act of Don Giovanni the following year. And that evening, when I sang the first act, a guy that then became casting director in Salzburg was present, and he asked me if I wanted to do an audition with Harnoncourt, and I said of course, and I sang an audition with Harnoncourt, and then I met an agent who told me, would you like to do an audition in Klagenfurt for Figaro? And I said, of course. And I went and I had a very good day vocally. And I remember I sang Se Vol Ballare and Non Piondrai. And they told me, would you like to do it? And I said, of course. And I did it. And I remember I had very long hair, and then I went back, I started the rehearsal, and they were all disappointed that I cut off my hair. But it was very cute. It was a great experience.
And now, you already mentioned you sung more than 150 performances.
Yes.
But were there, like, in the morning you woke up and said maybe, oh, tonight not Figaro again? Or are you always happy still to sing that?
Never.
Role?
And it never happens to me. And even when I am at home and I warm up and I'm tired, and I say to myself, oh, the last thing I want to do today is singing, as soon as I walk into the theater, it's like I had five Red Bulls, because my system goes, you're singing tonight.
Yeah.
And there is this excitement, energy, and there is nothing that I find more addictive than being on a stage and act and see colleagues and sing and the light and the audience and the orchestra, nothing. So even in my worst day, I find that I owe it to the audience and to myself for having the luck of doing this job which is not a job, it's my passion.
It is.
And so I refuse to ever give a performance where I haven't given 100%. And sometimes, you know, you are not well, the voice doesn't answer, and you say, today was a 70% performance. But I want the audience to see that the 70% was everything I had.
Yeah.
I never leave anything in the dressing room, ever. And if you came, especially after the third act of Hoffman now, you will see from the fact that my shirt is completely drenched that I am honest in my response.
No, I totally believe you. I think it was in Vienna 2014 when you switched the roles in Figaro for the first time.
Correct.
And took on the role of Conte d'Alma Viva. So how was that experience?
Oh, I loved it. I love it because as much as I love Figaro, and I've done it so many times, I find the Count an incredibly complex character. And it's so much fun to play because I feel like as a middle-aged guy who, you know, is getting a little bit older and women don't look at him like they used to. And so he's going through a crisis. And yes, he's in love with Rosina, but the fact that he's, you know, running after girls keeps him young, and it is so, there is so much, the dramatic journey is so big that I wanted to take the challenge. It's also challenging vocally, obviously, but as a performer, I think it was such an amazing challenge, and it was really nice to, I'm really happy I've done it because it is a gorgeous role, and it helped me understand Figaro. And having done so much Figaro, I had so much understanding for the Count. So it was really beautiful.
But do you also agree that the Conte is a bit more interesting as a person than Figaro because of all the layers
yes.
you mentioned?
Yes, in the piece, absolutely. Because if you look at the beginning, and then there is the rage in the second act, and then trying to ask for forgiveness, and then the third act with the seduction, the big aria, and then the last act where you arrived the most beautiful moment, which is Contessa Perdono.
Out of this world.
When you get to sing that, you think, oh God, I'm a lucky man.
Right.
Because it's one of the most beautiful lines. It's so simple, and yet at that moment it is so, honestly, I sang it in Houston, and at that moment they put something in the subtitles, and they start laughing, and I felt so hurt.
Oh my God! Yes.
At the dress rehearsal, I felt so hurt because I wanted to say, "I'm honest."
Yeah.
As a Count, in that moment, I think he's honest, and the music is so beautiful because he really means it.
It's the most
what happens
honest words. Yeah.
A week after that, it's another conversation.
But in this
in
moment,
that moment,
it's
he
honest.
Really looks at her and he says, "Forgive me.
Yeah.
I know I hurt you." And I think it was really amazing to see how when you do this role, you can be so vulnerable. And I never thought I would be so singing this role because, you know, nowadays it thinks, is a boss who's trying to have an affair. It's just much more complicated than that.
Of course. And it's so much fun to build up this character and also to do your homework making this portrait of this guy.
Yes.
It's the most awesome
yes.
thing. And also what you said when singing Contessa Perdono, it's also the same thing I had in mind when I sang it, how lucky I am to sing this music. I mean, this is really, I have no words to describe what Mozart did there. I think no one can describe except him.
And also because he arrives to a moment after you are gente, gente, allarme, and you are angry, and all of a sudden
it stops.
Boom. And it was really magical, really, really magical, I think.
Yes, I totally agree. Mozart in general is one, if not the biggest composer of your career. Figaro, Conte, Leporello, Don Giovanni, Guglielmo, Publio, even Papageno.
Yeah, what?
What does his music and operas mean to you?
I think it's the most theatrical composer that is out there. I think it gives you so much in terms of dramatic possibility, and you can push the envelope so much, staying in the frame that he gave you, and to give so much of yourself into it, that I always had such a close relationship with it, because I think the way he has written, and the fact that his music, considering, you know, when he composed this, is so modern, that is mind-blowing how so close to what we feel as human beings he got. And this, I find that, you know, I find that every time I listen to it, I discover something else, or I can portray something else. And this is what I love about this composer.
Yeah.
And there is nothing, I don't know how to explain this, but there is something also about the singing that I think is very important. Because when you do a little bit the bel canto, the verismo, you know, you tend to do portamenti, you take sounds from below.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
when you go back to sing Mozart, I go, that's a forbidden. So it's a phenomenal voice teacher, because it really helps you to stay light, to sing pure, without much vibrato, you know, the tempi. No, it's just perfection for me.
Somehow he knew the voices, right?
He knew the voices, and he knew human beings, because he is so brilliant in 2 pages to set the mood for everything. Yeah. That is, it's miraculous, honestly.
It is.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Totally
it's miraculous.
It is.
You see, you know, for me, when I sing Figaro, I get to tutto è tranquillo, and I go, this guy understood everything. And this, and I always say to myself, you know, if I composed that page, I would be a very successful composer, because it's all there.
It's a genius. And 1 year after your professional debut, you were part of what we call today a historical moment in the opera business. We already talked about it. You've been singing the part of Masetto in Don Giovanni at the Salzburg Festival in 2002. And if this fact wouldn't be exciting enough for a young singer, you were part of a fabulous cast. Arnoncourt in The Pit, Anna Netrebko singing Donna Anna and being discovered, Thomas Hampson, who is now your father-in-law, singing the title role. Tell us about that very special summer where everything changed.
Yeah, in the brand of Arcangelo singing Leporello.
Right.
Magdalena Kozina singing Zerlina.
Yeah.
Martin Kuja in directing. Michael Schade singing Ottavio. Melanie Dean singing Elvira. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was like my first day of school. And I remember I arrived and I was like, I hope they are not going to tell me we made a mistake. You can't go back. And it was epic. I mean, there is nothing else there. I don't think I missed one rehearsal. I would go to the rehearsal even when not called, because this amount, these geniuses all present at the same time.
Mm.
This creative energy was so much, and it was so captivating, that I said to myself, "Look, go." And try to absorb as much as you can, because God knows next time when this is going to happen again. And it, in fact, was miraculous. And, you know, I always talk about my life before Salzburg 2002 and after Salzburg 2002, because it really changed my life.
In every sense.
Yeah. Not only because I met my wife, you know, but because really musically for me was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it was so mesmerizing. Also, the vision of Arnoncourt that I remember at the first Sitzprobe when I did the finale. I couldn't sing. I couldn't sing because I thought the musical ideas that Arnoncourt had was so brilliant. that I remember just listening, going, wow. And then I realized that, oh, I was supposed to sing. Sorry, maestro. But because I remember we really worked very hard on this recitativo before the finale of Act One. And it was like, ah, capisco, bricconcella. Timurchio comprenda come tra voi passate la. And then he started the orchestra. Presto, presto.
What you wouldn't expect.
No, huh? Because yeah. Everybody goes, passate la faccenda, pom, pom, ta 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 ta, yeah. Presto, presto. And he said, no, because it's like a movie where you know, you can see the people thinking, and I really, and with the Wiener Philharmonic playing, I was like an audience going, that's amazing. Yeah. And then eventually Maestro Nucur brought me back to reality and said, by the way, you didn't. No, it was and Anna, I remember the entire cast with their jaws to the floor after Anna sang the first duet with Michael Schadden. No, it was a Magdalena Kojan. I mean, it was mind blowing. My father-in-law, it's mind blowing. mind blown.
And it was also the time when you were discovered for the international career, right?
Yes, correct.
Like the first time people get aware of
yes,
your singing.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Thomas Hampson,
yes.
Who is now your father-in-law, we
correct.
Said it already. Pleasure or pressure to have him as
both? I think it's a little bit of both. It's pleasure because he's a very caring and loving father-in-law, and I could not be luckier to have somebody in my life who understands what being an opera singer means. And there are certain things that we only tell to each other, you know, and because we know what it takes to do what we do. It's hard. It's hard work,
especially on that level.
It's hard work, working, and the pressure and the challenges and this incredible disappointment that you have with yourself between your dreams of what you're doing and then the reality of what happens because of the production. You know, a lot of factor goes into it. So, and it's pressure because, you know, singing, singing
next to one of the greatest baritones,
some of the repertoire that he sang, and which I think is, you know, one of the best in interpreter out there. It is a lot of pressure, but we are very lucky because we do this No Tenors Allowed together.
Yeah.
Where
this concert
where I can tell, I challenge everybody to not see the respect and the love that we have for each other, and the fact that we are very close as artists and we feed off each other on stage and we enjoy being on stage together.
It brings it to a completely new level, right?
Yeah, because it's like playing tennis, right?
Yeah.
If somebody, you have a colleague who gives you a nice ball, you can really answer well. And this is what we have to do.
Yeah. Another speciality of yours is the music of the Baroque period and the so-called early music. Handel, Cavalli, Lully, Rameau, and many more. What makes the music of those eras so appealing to you?
I always call it the jazz part of it, because they always have like an inner tempo that is so modern and is so ahead of the time that really allows you so much freedom and the possibility to really be unique in the sense that a lot of time the text gets repeated so many times, so it pushes you to invent and find new way to say the same phrase or the same word 10 times in different ways. And this is the challenge that I like, because, you know, it would be really boring to say the same word in the same way. So I love also the fact that it an incredibly challenging repertoire, despite what people think, because of the range of voice that you need to have to sing this. You know, you go from sometimes low D to F sharps. Yeah. And, you know, I always thought I can really hone my craft and my technique doing this repertoire without killing myself. And I'm very happy that I got the chance to do it.
Ability. I mean, I'm always impressed when I listen to your early.
You know, it's funny enough because you know, we all have our idols, right? And one of my idols, as you know, is Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the first time I saw him, he did Momento Secondo alla Scala, I think it was 1994. And I remember my father had to grab me from the jacket because I was so drawn to his performance and the coloratura that I almost fell off the box. and then I got to meet him. And we were talking about Momento and we were talking about Rinaldo. And once before I said goodbye to him, he looked at me and said, you know, Luca, I heard your Rinaldo from Glyndebourne. And honestly, bravo. It was so fast. There is no way I could have done it.
Wow.
And it's so funny. And I remember calling my wife in the car on the drive home, and I said to her, and so can you imagine he said that? And it's very nice when somebody you admire, you know, actually heard you and has something nice to say, because it's
awesome. Yeah.
It's awesome, you know, because for me it's always been, you know, the base of a reference for my generation, because he sang everything from Bach to Stravinsky.
Right.
Everything.
Yeah.
And you know, and it was amazing. So to have him say that to me, I was like, okay, you know, my voice is, I don't have your voice, but thank you very much.
But isn't it great to also to have like chats with your idols?
Yes.
This is the most exciting
thing. Yeah, I went to him because I was doing Maometto for the first time in 2012 in Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredibly challenging role. And so I wanted to talk to him to try to understand, you know, where I could save, you know, the tempi. And it was very helpful because, you know, Rossini, it's a very complicated, and you need to find the tempo that works for your voice, and it's a process. And yeah. So I wanted to know how he solved all these issues.
So you worked also with him, or just you talked?
No, we just had a chat. But it was enough because. You know, he knows the role very well, and I knew the role. I already studied, so you know, he really could help me.
Yeah. How do you deal with the life of an international opera singer? I mean, with all the traveling, fast learning, and meeting new teams every time. I mean, this life. How do you deal with it? Yeah.
I don't think about it, to be honest. I enjoy it. I'm lucky enough that my wife and my golden retriever and miniature dachshund can travel with me all the time.
The opera dogs
can travel with me all the time. So I don't see this as a sacrifice, you know. And I always have two feelings. When I start, I'm always shy. And I'm always... I don't know what to say, but need a little bit of time to understand
the vibes,
what kind of colleagues I have around, if I can be myself or if, you know, or not. And I always have a little bit of sadness when a project is over. Uh-huh. It's I can't help it because it's such a...
Like a family?
It's a family. And I believe very strongly that I am a better singer when I have a great cast around me. I never believed in this, it's about me and everybody else, because the best thing I've done is when the cast was such a top notch that I went home and saying, I really have to bring my A game because there are amazing singers in this cast. Yeah. And I think the sharing of such deep emotion and the discovery, and the creation, it really takes a lot of energy out of me. And when a project is over, I'm always a little bit sad, if not depressed.
Wow.
Really, yeah. Because it's, especially when it's such an amazing job, I feel it's very sad that it's over.
And when you give so much,
and you have very nice relationship with people, you know, that you spend 2 months with, two months is a lot of time.
Like every day being together.
And, you know, and once somebody's sick, somebody has a cold, and then something happened, you know, and you share all this. And it's a problem of mine. I cannot just detach myself and go, I worry about myself. I try to fight it for so long, and then eventually said, you know, you are past 40. I think you should embrace it, my friend.
Agreed,
because it's much better. Yeah. It's much better than try to fight it.
Except the way you are. No, I'm happy that you are like this. It makes you special. But you never miss that stable home, like to have this. I mean, I can imagine you have a beautiful flat. Not to spend more time there and always be on the road. Are you able to make your every town a little home?
Yes. Of course, sometimes when you rent an apartment and it has a terrible mattress, you're like, why do I have such a beautiful mattress at home and I never use it? But I don't, no.
So you're totally fine with your
life. I am totally fine because it is such a, you know, when it works, it's amazing. Yeah. And it's, I always say to, to friends, it's kind of perverse, if I can use this word, because we keep going 12 months for the 5 times a year when everything aligns. And it's crazy how addiction it is, because, you know, there are 5 times a year that is like this: great production, great colleagues, great conductor, wonderful orchestra, and your voice is like pam pam pam, and everything comes out, and you're like, God, I love this job. And 5 times a year, and then, you know, for 11 months and 25 days, you're like, oh no,
you suffer. Let's talk about your opera dogs, Lenny and Tristan, your faithful companions on the road.
Yes,
they are going with you everywhere. even on plane.
It's a deal that I made with my wife that I cannot conceive this job being alone, and it made no sense to be together, and then I would be in San Francisco for 2 months
mm.
and everybody would be in Vienna for 2 months. This is something that I don't, I know that there are colleagues that they do it. I cannot deal with it. And so we really decided from the beginning that it would be much better for everybody if we just moved together as a family.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, it's challenging because you need to organize yourself and the traveling and the dogs are not accepted. And, you know, and there is a lot of organization, but it's the best way for me. And it makes me feel at home everywhere I go.
Yeah. Can't imagine. Also, your wife is always with you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
but that's very great. Yeah.
My colleagues know that when she's not around, they go, "Is everything okay?" I said, "Yes, yes, she has a meeting." Yes, because really, it's because there is nothing for me. There is nothing more. Sad is not the right word, but it's nothing more disappointing than having had a phenomenal high with a performance and then go back home by yourself with nobody to share it with. So the fact that she's here and she can see the show and share with me the emotion, it's really a bonding experience.
I have to go back to Mozart, I'm okay. Sorry. Mozart's masterpiece Don Giovanni has a special significance in your career and in your life in every way. I mean, what impresses me the most is that you've sung three roles in it, starting with the Mazzetto, owning Leporello for several years, finally being the Don himself, debuting at the Metropolitan right. Opera in 2019. What kind of feeling was it to sing the title role after you've heard so many colleagues the years before?
For me, it's a very challenging role. It's, you know, having done so many Leporellos, I never had a Don Giovanni who at the end of the show was happy.
Really?
Nah, because if you... if you are not superficial in the sense that you say, oh, you know, is a libertino, is a womanizer, you realize that it's so much more complex, the character. And every time you do it, you think, ah, you know, I was sexy, but there was a little bit of the violence missing. I did this, but this, I didn't show it. So it's a little bit so... an elusive character that you try to grab and you,
it's impossible,
it's
right?
impossible.
Yeah.
Because everybody in the audience and we all have an opinion on how Aldo Giovanni should be.
Yeah.
And you can only disappoint because somebody finds you dangerous, yeah. But oh, it was not elegant. Yeah. You are elegant, oh, but it's not sexy. You know, it's so difficult.
Full of stereotypes, like it's like the male Carmen.
Correct. Huh? Yeah. It's full of stereotypes, and but I have to say, when I sang it, the for me the two moments that really are key, and I. You know, and I understand why people are so attracted is the cemetery, where the first time he realizes that he might be confronted with something bigger than him, and the last big scene, that where he's trying to be cool, and then Elvira comes, and his true disgusting nature comes out.
Yeah. And then, anymore, yeah.
and then he meets the commentatore, and it's such a, when you play this, and the commentatore comes in and he tells you, you know, I'm here as a Don Giovanni, it is one of the best feeling
it is,
for an opera singer, I tell you.
Yeah. But it's also the first role where I accepted that I cannot grab it completely. I like, okay, you can make, you have an imagination, but it's impossible to understand and to make him alive.
You know, and yeah. I am one of these singer who, despite the fact that I try to control myself and say, oh, be cool, that's just, then I arrive in on scene, and like this, when there is a phrase that he says, o fermo il cor in petto, and every time I was like, oh, it's a D, just o ferm, and then every night I would go, o ferm, because you can't,
yeah.
I have a humongous admiration of colleagues who can divide the physical aspect to it with the singing. I just can't. I think it's impossible.
Yeah.
So it. But when I arrived there, it's like,
I screamed like hell.
Oh yeah, it doesn't matter
because the hell was so close. Do you prefer singing Leporello or Giovanni?
It's not comparable. It's I love them so much that I cannot choose.
And you also sing both, still.
Yeah,
right?
And you can't choose. It's like which children do you prefer? It's impossible for me. It's really impossible. And there is one thing that I have to say that is I am completely in love with the humanity of Leporello and the fact that a normal guy experiences an extraordinary life through being close to somebody else who is so extraordinary.
Yeah. But do you have a favorite role in general?
No.
You can't
never
say, yeah?
I know. Never. I love the role that I'm singing at the moment. There is no such a thing for me. There is no such a thing. It's really something that I try to think about it. Yes, there are roles that I would like to sing, but a role that I'm like, oh, I would like to sing that. No, because...
That one role doesn't exist for you.
No, they're all... I am so lucky that I get to do such amazing roles. It's impossible to choose.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. And you're also quite versatile. I mean, your repertoire, of course, you're famous for all your Mozart and Handel interpretations, but you're also convincing in roles like Escamillo, Mametto II, Collò, Mephisto, or even the four villains in Le Conte of Man. Is it important to you to not get stuck in just one kind of repertoire, but be that versatile?
Yeah, for me, it was always a plus, you know, because... This is what the great singer of the past have done. They sang everything, you know. And so for me, it's very important to show that, you know, I can do different things. And as I said, my, you know, the best compliment that you can give me is, you know, I didn't realize it was you.
Yeah.
Because you really entered in somebody else's body and I didn't know it was you. And it happens a couple of times where people talked about performances and didn't realize it was me.
Really?
Because, yeah. And for me, it's an amazing compliment because, you know, I go on stage not to show me, but to show what I think of a role. It's, you know what I mean? I don't go and repeat myself because I think it's utterly boring. And so for me, you know, to be versatile is very important. And in these current times, it's a little bit of a problem to be versatile because sometimes people have a problem in categorizing you.
They cannot deal with it, right?
And then they don't know they don't know, oh, what is it? And it's something that I, 20 years ago when I started, nobody ever thought about it, honestly. Yeah. Because think about somebody like Van Damme, he sang everything.
Yeah.
Italian, French, German,
songs,
everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he sang 450 performances of Figaro, which is unimaginable nowadays, unimaginable.
Yeah.
So for me, it's always been in my mind that I had to show that I have different side of my personality.
Or close to, like where your voice didn't want to work the way you commanded.
Yes, but this is they all told me, and they all told me that you get around 36, 37, and then things change, and everybody told me. I remember Franny told me. I remember Van Damme told me. It is something that. It's not about the quality of the technique, it's just the body changes. I think a male body around 40 changes,
mm-hmm.
and things that I never had to think about, or just that happen because you're young and the muscle, you know, are there, or whatever, didn't happen anymore. So
it was like that.
It was absolutely like that. And you know, it takes a little bit of time because you're like, okay, I don't understand. I've been doing this for 15 years, it's always happened, and now all of a sudden, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And so you need to go back and think, and the solutions are making very small adjustments, not big, big adjustments. And I'm very convinced that when you go to a teacher and he tells you, oh, it's all wrong, you need to restart, it's a mistake. And you just really have to solve it by yourself.
Yeah.
And I really believe in this.
And that's what you did.
I listened to a lot of people and then I discarded a lot of things because I believe that, this is very personal, because I believe that not every note is created equal, in the sense that there are some teachers that they tell you you're singing a D and it should be that sound all the time. And I always say the sound depends on what you're saying and how you're saying it. what vowel, what is in the orchestra. I cannot tell you, I cannot tell, make a decision in a studio that sound is going to be the same all the time.
Yeah.
Because, and I tell you, it's very funny. I tell you, if you think about a D, right, in Mozart, la grande maestosa, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing. And to do in Don Carlo, che so sei un uomo fra lo stuolo man, it's a D. But it feels like an F sharp because the orchestra is much bigger, because the phrase is much longer.
Yeah.
So this idea that you sing everything in the same way is something that is against my my belief in what being a singer is. So I listened to a lot of people, I took some ideas, and then I realized that I had to make changes, and I had to make small changes at the time until I found what worked for me.
Yeah.
But it happens to everybody.
Yeah. Well, thanks sharing that.
And now I could tell you, no, I get up in the morning and everything is easy. No, never. But it happens, and I always say you need to be prepared because you don't have to freak out, but it's a natural thing that the body, especially for a man, I don't know a woman 100%, but around 40, the body, you know, the body changes. And there were, but also changes in positive, because for example, my first Gounod Faust I was past 40, and I'm very happy that I waited, because some heaviness in the role, some long phrases, I could have never sustained it had I done it when I was in my 30s.
Interesting.
And so I think it's a job that doesn't keep, it's not boring, let's put it that way.
There's always something to discover,
oh,
right?
God. Yes.
We are in the age of stage directors.
Yes.
You've worked with all kind of directors in as well traditional and modern stagings. What is your impression about those developments? I mean, no names, but did you ever had real fights with a director about staging?
It's very interesting that you ask me this, because I'm boring, and I tell you, I never had a fight. I really have never had a fight. I had arguments about certain things, but I always approach a new director completely open-minded, and I try to understand what they want. Because I always say, if I understand, I can convince the audience. If I don't understand what you want, I can't tell them this is why I'm doing this. Even in the situation where I thought, oh my God, this is really stretching it, this doesn't make any sense, I always try to create my own reality to justify what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
And for example, in a scene in Così fan tutte, I was supposed to tell the person who was not supposed to hear it the line. And I was like, but she's not supposed to hear it. And I'm like, oh no. And then eventually I thought, you know what? Okay, it's like a movie when there is the image and you hear him thinking. And I will act like I am you, the audience can hear my thoughts. And this, I tell you, has helped me very much, because instead of having this friction, it creates a atmosphere of trust that helps me grow. And I believe there are two kinds of artists. The one that they are lemons, that they need the frictions and the bitterness to create, and the flowers. And I'm that they need love and care to grow. And I'm definitely a flower that I think in the positive and in the harmony, I create better. I definitely create better than in a relationship where you always feel like I'm fighting, and instead in an atmosphere of understanding, and also in an atmosphere where I can try something and I am not ashamed of show weakness.
Yeah.
And when I get there, it's the best work I've ever done.
So for the arts, you're also able to step back your ego and to create.
Oh, look, another spoiler alert.
Yeah.
If you want to become an opera singer, forget your ego, because it's as I always say, my wife and I, we laugh about this all the time, is a constant bath in humility, this job.
Yeah.
Because if it's not the conductor, it's the director, it's the language coach, it's the pianist, or your own judgment of yourself that brings you back to reality.
Starker König, liebster Heiland, oh, wie bin ich, achtest du dir jeden Pakt, liebster Heiland, großer, oh, starker König, wenn ich achtest du dir den Pakt, großer,
what have been your most funny moments on stage, like unplanned breakdowns or where things didn't went as planned? Is there
funny,
something you will remember forever?
No, funny. There are funny moments where, you know, I've done things on stage where I trusted the director and to make a little movement and then having the entire audience laughing because it was a funny thing. Those are for me are, you know, the success of my career. Funny, you know, I don't believe in joking on stage in the sense that I think every performance is like a premiere for me. So I think the audience deserve my full commitment and I don't like to make jokes that is just for the colleagues. I've never done that. Yeah. You know, it's really...
It's disrespectful in a way, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, for me yeah. It's not necessary, yeah. You know, but for me it I love it when I can do comedy on stage and, you know, and you're a lot of people that react to what I do.
Yeah, it's also what I've seen now when we rehearse together. Like, I mean, as I said, you are such a funny, great colleague and it's so much fun with you. But when it's about the rehearsal itself, the music, the acting, you take it very seriously.
Oh, yes, unfortunately.
And this was so impressive to me.
Unfortunately for everybody, I
love that because it, on one hand, you are this funny, great colleague, but on the other hand, when it's about the work, it's the work.
It's the work. And for me, it's very important that we keep it, you know, because I believe that rehearsal are a process of getting to a point where you feel confident in what you do. And so I don't only use it as my journey to discover the character, but I need to be respectful of my colleagues who do the same with their role, bigger, smaller, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But everybody's there and I find to invade your personal space and not being and making jokes or making comments while maybe for you that moment is difficult, unprofessional. Yeah. So I'm happy we can go and have a beer and have fun, but you know, when the music starts, it's business. So we really have to take it seriously.
Right. No, I couldn't agree more. Another passion of yours are Lieder.
Yes.
Art songs. I mean, not very typical for an Italian singer, but...
Tell me about it.
Clarify that you're not a typical Italian singer. But how did you fall in love with songs?
It is this amazing combination of music, words, and imagery of nature to tell how we feel about something. Which I think it's. I really, when I sing songs, I feel like even more than opera because I have a medium to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact of how naked you are on stage when you sing song because it's your pianist, you, and there is no set, there is no light, there's no costume.
You are yourself.
Yeah, you know, and at the beginning it was really challenging because I was like, maybe I'm boring. I have nothing to say, but I learned so much doing this. And it helped me also understand that sometimes stillness is the best way to tell a story,
mm-hmm.
without overdoing it with hands, with gesture, with movement. Sometimes when you are into it and you sing, I don't know, Doppelgänger, you just have to focus on somebody in the audience. And with the expression of your face, you know, tell the story. Yeah. And this is so, when it happens, it is so powerful.
Mm.
And it's so fulfilling as a musician that I think it's amazing. And I learned so much from it, And also musically, it pushes you really to the limit. And I learned so much that I can take some of the ideas and musical, musical choices I made in the leader, transfer it to opera.
Yeah.
So that it's not just screaming and I have a big voice and look here,
greatest,
you know,
actor. Yeah.
You know, it's just also, you know, made me think, okay, I'm saying this and it's in piano. Okay, let's try and then see if it goes.
Yeah. Do you have favorite composers in song? Well, your heroes.
Oh, they are. For me, Schubert. I like Gounod. I like Saint-Saëns. And there is something about how, you know, it's like doing a little opera that lasts 3 minutes,
yeah.
And it's so condensed and it's so full of words, emotion, and it's just amazing.
Volte già dal bel sembiante umano, ho preso ardir con le mie fide scorte, da salir con parole oneste accorte, la mia nemica in atto umile piano, fanno poi gli occhi suoi mio pensiero vano, perché la mia fortuna, ogni mia sorte, mio ben, mio male, mia vita e mia morte, perché so il tuo fare la posta in mano. Un Dio non pote mai formare parola ch'altro che da me stesso fosse intesa, così m'ha fatto amore tremante fioco. E vecchio ben che caritate accesa lega la lingua altrui gli spiriti in gola, chi può dire come gli arde in piccio il fuoco.
You even discovered a German composer,
Reichert.
Johann Friedrich Reichert.
Yeah,
right.
Reichert, and it was very interesting because I discovered a recording of Fischer Disco, and I thought, oh, that would be interesting, and it's amazing actually how so close to Schubert he sound, and they are really beautiful, and it helped me also approach the Italian repertoire in the sense of songs with a better, how you say, with a seriousness that sometimes as an Italian singer you don't use, because we use like Tosti and Bellini and Donizetti to say, oh, I have a beautiful voice. Instead, if you approach this composer like you would be singing Schubert, you realize that actually their writing is much more refined.
Yeah.
And all these portamenti and fermata that are not written, you should have been doing it because it was not meant in that way.
Yeah, but also you can learn from the song. I mean, that's what I learn when I sing songs. All the colors, and I can also bring them into opera to see, oh, how can I even more find sense in the words, in the colors,
but
in opera.
For example, because of the Hoffman, there is at the end when I read the letter, souviens-toi, souviens-toi. This is in the leader. Everybody knows I say it twice. It's an echo. So the second time you have to do it really piano,
yeah.
almost with without vibrato to give this impression,
yeah.
And this is musical idea that you say, oh, it works, there is nothing in the orchestra, it works.
Yeah.
Thank you, Schubert, for teaching me this.
Yeah, no, and it's so interesting what you can do with a single word, just the way you pronounce it. I already told you, for me, you are a hero just for singing Madamina, how you sing the word Madamina. I mean, there's a world in this one word, how you say Madamina. I can hear everything. Yeah?
No, this is not me. This is Arno Kaur. I have to tell you, it was, you know, doing a working session with him on this was it was worth 25 years in the conservatory, I tell you that.
I can imagine. You have to write a book later.
Yeah, no, it's you know, it's all the, you know, you realize that, you know, it is so much more than entertainment for me. Mm-hmm. This art form, it tells us who we are as human beings. So it's not just entertaining people. It's much more than that.
That's it. It should be like that, yeah. Right. So when will we get a full Winterreise by Luca Pizzaroni?
Oh, you keep waiting. Wait.
It's in the line?
No, you know, it is. I have such a great respect for this that I really thought, you know, you don't run a marathon without training. And I thought, you know, just let's sing some of the Schubert songs, you know, maybe do the Heine from the Schwanengesang, and then trying to understand the language, trying to understand the style, and then we'll see. Because I think you need a little bit of humility when you approach a cycle that it is so known,
course,
and it's so iconic. And
For me as a German, it's like the Holy Grail.
And I don't want to sing something, you know, in an Italian way. I really want to try to sing it in a, you know, respecting the words, respecting the tradition, and respecting, you know, the musical language. And it takes time.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What are your wishes for the future? Do you have any life plan, like, I want to sing until then I want to live there? Or are you totally open-minded will happen?
I tell you what Pavarotti said in an interview when he was doing Turandot in San Francisco in the 90s. He said, you know, I made planned all my life saying I'm singing this and I'm singing that, and none of it happened. So I decided that, you know, and Pavarotti was one of the greatest. So, you know, so I decided that forget about plans. No, I have one thing that I'm really passionate about, and I think it's paramount, is that we have the duty to include the young generation and involve the young generation in this art form, because it is life-changing to be part of this world. And if I think of myself as a child, you know, in Busseto, and I felt completely out of place because I didn't like football, and I felt I never had really a lot of friends because somehow I couldn't relate to anybody. And then here he goes, listening to Boris Christoph singing Elegy of My Mamma, and I realized that here where I belonged. Yeah. I really would like, you know, people to have this experience because it can really change your life, and it can teach you things about yourself and how to approach life, and because being a singer means listening, working with other people, being pleasant, being professional. There is so much that I learned being a singer, and so I think we have a duty to involve the young generation, and it's not easy. And I wish theater would do much more to include the youngster. It happened at the Met to me a couple of times where I met young kids after a dress rehearsal, and it's amazing because they think of us as weird people, you know, overweight, old, and boring. And then they saw that you don't have to be that, and they were amazed how entertaining, you know, I could be. Yeah. And this is something that I think we need to make an effort, because sometimes, you know, we delegate to families, and instead it's our responsibility to take people inside and to show them, look, there is also this that you could find interesting and could change your life.
Right. Is teaching a topic for you?
I do teach because I think Because I think I was so lucky and to work with amazing people, and I was given so many tools to try to understand, you know, myself, that I think it's my duty to tell people what I was you know, told. It's not about, you know, I don't believe in these masterclasses that change a singer forever, but I think the job of a masterclass is to show other possibilities, and you could tell, look, you are going down that path, but look over here, there is this, and maybe, you know, it doesn't change the next day, but it creates a thoughtful process where the singer says, you know, I don't want to sing like this, I would like to sing like that, so let's try to go in that direction. But it's not an easy task, and it's very exhausting. I was at the Bolshoi recently, and they told me to do master classes, and I tell you, I had like 2-3 a day. It is exhausting. It's because I cannot just sit there and go, oh,
of course not.
And I was like trying to give, you know, people. There was a fantastic soprano who gave me the recitativo before Osaki Lenore. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, no, wait, I can tell you what I could ask. And no, don't do that. And do go there. And piano here, it's like, you know, and give me these levels. And
it's,
you know,
exhausting.
And 45 minutes later, I was like, oh, my God, no, I'd rather sing the teacher. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, especially if someone has so much to say like you, with all this passion. So
I just can't. Yeah. You know, I cannot do things halfway. Either I'm in it or I'm. Yeah. And so I look at somebody, thinks, you know, just smile, and I'm like, no, it's serious. And I always did it. I can't. I used to be ashamed of the fact that I care so much,
and you shouldn't.
I now, you know. It's one thing about turning 40 is just you go, that I don't care about this. Your opinion completely uninteresting, and you really are comfortable in your own skin. And I really decided that I don't want to be ashamed of the fact that I think this art form is amazing.
Yeah. Now I can imagine that you are a great teacher. And I also think that it's this secret of your career, that you're not only a great singer, but you also live the passion of opera. For you, it really means something.
Yes.
And this is what I'm missing in some of the big singers from today, that sometimes I only see that they are doing the job, but I don't see the passion behind. And I adore people like you who are really living this dream, who are this one choice.
Yeah, for me, it's impossible to, you know, it's an amazing opportunity to do this. And I think I would think, you know, here again, my Catholic upbringing, I would think it's a crime to not put your passion into something like this, because, you know, it's what I always wanted to do. And so, to come and do, you know, a little bit of it or 20% of it is just not acceptable.
And we are very happy that you are doing what you love so much, and that you're giving so much to us.
Thank you.
And Luca, it's such a pleasure
to be on stage with you, to be here with you, to talk with you. Yeah, it's a pleasure for me. It's been great to get to know you and to work together. So, and good luck to us, because we still have some shows. So there you have it.
We do. Luca, thank you so much for taking the time and for having so beautiful insights in your career.
Thank you so much.